I have the honor of introducing Michael W. Lukers, who is an author of both technical as well as fictional works. And he is going to be reading both to us today. So we're going to start with the fictional work. And also, if you want to ask any questions, you can send them in via the form on the streaming website, as well as via Twitter or Mastodon with hashtag PW20 and PW20Online, as well as there is going to be an option to meet him afterward, after the talk, in a Big Blue Button room that is also linked on our streaming website. Okay, Michael.
Thanks, Albert, and hello, everyone. Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be able to do this for you. And I'm told this is a way to have a nice, gentle ending to a Saturday. So I'm going to start by reading a bit from my murder mystery, Git Commit Murder, which is set at a Unix conference in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. So here we go. This is from the beginning. Dale thought the lobby of Byward University's main residence hall looked like it was designed to host over-adrenalized post-pubescent howler monkeys who had just discovered that extra-strong Canadian booze, which, in all fairness, pretty much was the design specification. The mottled pale amber tile with just enough rippling texture to keep water and mud from making the floor totally impassable 6 months of the year, was clearly chosen for industrial durability first and charm second. A broad glass wall exposed a couple of weirdly young-looking students meandering towards the brick lecture hall across the parking lot. The poured concrete walls had faint swirling trowel marks, a dab of character beneath layers of industrial semi-gloss white. Posters beneath framed plastic plexiglass advertised an Ottawa summer concert series, the sexual assault hotline, the Student Learning Resource Center, no, Centre. Each proclaimed its message in French and English, both carefully sized for precise balance. Even in June, during the campus's summer semester, the rhythmically humming air conditioning couldn't quite suck away undertones of fresh bleach and cleanser, the Sunday afternoon cover-up of a college dorm's Saturday night. Supposedly, the BSD North Tech Conference was held this time of year, specifically because the dormitories and lecture halls were mostly abandoned, but maybe the summer student self-selected for, most likely to not get away with this kind of crap at home. At least the lobby had a dozen exits, leading out to the pedestrian walkway and the parking lot. Once, a 30-foot arch had welcomed everyone straight into the residence hall. In some prior decade, a wooden frame had been fitted into the arch, supporting a sturdy glass wall pierced by two turnstile guarded doorways. You couldn't walk into the residences without passing straight by 15 feet of reception. Dale Whitehead had seen less solid reception counters at low-rent hotels back home in Detroit. The counter base was some heavy white glossy material, scuffed by years of idly kicking feet, topped with a sea blue slab that looked like formica but had to be far tougher. The tall, skinny, black guy with the impressive crop of acne working the counter seemed perfectly cheerful as he discussed housing options with a bony kid wearing black. Not really a kid, Dale reminded himself. He had to be at least 20, maybe 22. 10 years younger than Dale didn't mean a kid, not anymore. But if you showed up at a university dorm expecting to get a private room, a private bath, and a big screen TV, you sure weren't a grown-up yet. And yet the guy working the counter seemed perfectly cheerful as he patiently explained that the building didn't have anything like what the kid wanted. Dale guessed it was true how they said Canadians were too polite. And Canada's capital was probably the most stereotypically Canadian city of all. Dale released the handle of his brand new rolling carry-on and flexed his stiff fingers. Detroit was one of the few cities in the States that offered direct flights to Ottawa, but he'd had to jam his 290 pounds into a cramped seat for 2 hours, his kneecaps bruisingly crushed against the seat in front of him. The tiny commuter jet was 3 seats wide, one on the left and 2 on the right, so he hadn't needed to sit next to anyone, which helped. But every twitch of the stratosphere had knocked the jet like a toy in the bath. Even his favorite Agatha Christie novel hadn't been able to yank his attention away from the constant heaving of the plane and his stomach. 91 minutes on a blind roller coaster hadn't eased Dale's instinctive aversion to flying. His stomach still ached, and clammy sweat still soaked the back of his t-shirt beneath the hefty backpack holding his laptop and other gear. The crowded, weaving number 97 bus from the airport to Byward hadn't given him an opportunity to still himself. The lesson there: when you already have motion sickness, don't stand in the back of a tandem cantilevered bus. At least he'd taken his meds before getting on the plane. A flare of attention deficit disorder would wreck his plans before the con even started. "You've got to talk to Pete," the man standing behind Dale said. "Get this whole buffer cache thing sorted once and for all." "Pete does not want to talk," the woman said, her thin voice lumbering with a thick Eastern European accent. "It's the only way you'll work this out," the man said. "Sit at his table with him tonight, with a bunch of us. Have a beer. Talk about something else, anything else. Break the ice." "Oh, I'll have a beer," the woman said. "Probably on the other side of the bar. His whole page locking model's screwed. I'll need a beer just to get my head around it." They had to be here for the operating system conference. Dale should turn around, say hello, meet his first conference attendees. "You're here to talk to people, make contacts, learn. The convention committee flew you out here to present. That's why the boss told you to come here." But after the tumultuous flight on a jet that should have been labeled the leaky rowboat of the skies, the interminable wait at customs, and the nausea-inducing tandem bus, Dale just wanted to get to a room so he could peel out of his sweat-soaked t-shirt and sit in quiet stillness for 10 minutes. Give his heart a chance to slow. The roar of the airplane and the bus had faded from his ears, but still echoed inside his skull. "The longer you wait to introduce yourself, the harder it'll be." Dale made himself swallow. Even his teeth felt greasy. Airport bagels, miraculous things. Bread from anywhere else in the world wouldn't leave your mouth feeling quite that repulsive. "My breath probably smells like puke. My clothes have to stink after that flight. Not a good first impression." "We do still have one double room left," the counter guy said. "2 bedrooms with a shared bath. You could rent both sides." The kid at the counter said, "This is a joke, right? No, never mind. I'll call the hotel down the street. The Royal York, wasn't it?" "As you like, sir. There's a phone book near the payphone." Dale couldn't suppress a tiny smile. When Sharon LaPlace, the BSD North Conference travel coordinator, had informed Dale that speaker accommodations included a shared bedroom double suite, he'd flinched at the thought of sharing a bath and investigated hotel rooms. With the Canadian Parliament out of session and the Royal York had rooms available, and thanks to low demand, they'd lowered their rates to a paltry $400 a night. But no question the entitled kid would get his private room that way. The clerk looked up at Dale, relief shading his voice. "Bonjour, hello." Dale tugged his rolling bag forward in relief. "Yes, please." "No, that sounded too rough. Just because his flight up here had left him feeling violated didn't mean he should get snippy with this poor college student who probably worked here to pay his way through this same school." He coughed to reset his voice. You should have a reservation. Name of Dale Whitehead. Dale, you are 32 years old. Stop making everything sound like a question. They damn well better have a reservation for you. The kid clacked at his keyboard. Are you with a group? BSD North, Dale said. No, that's too harsh again. Sound confident, not like some jerk-face American. He tried to relax his shoulders with the weight of his backpack. The motion made the spots on his thick-lensed, wire-rimmed glasses more obvious. He needed to clean those too. Maybe a shower, straight away. Here you are, the clerk said. Half a double suite. Room 1408 on the 14th floor. Has Mr., he glanced down, Lash come with you? No, Dale said. Laplace's email had said that his suite mate was Warren Lash, a programmer with the SkyBSD project. Dale had heard the name before, knew he was a project bigwig, but had never interacted with the man. He's flying in from Colorado, someplace like that. I'm Warren Lash, said the man behind Dale, the guy who'd advocated beer. Okay, don't grimace. You're supposed to be friendly. No, you are friendly. You just have a hard time with people. Dale couldn't quite get a smile on his face as he turned. Warren Lash was a tall guy with long, straight red hair, with a face just picking up middle-aged fleshiness. He carried his laptop backpack with both straps over one shoulder, a tiny thing, probably holding an apple or some other triumph of style over power, and a big rolling suitcase festooned with stickers advertising open source software conferences in places like Serbia and Belize. Despite the darkened semicircles beneath his eyes, he grinned. Cocky? Friendly? Hard to tell. You must be Dale Whitehead, Lash said, holding out a hand. Utah. You know how to do this. Pull up the corners of your mouth. Show some teeth, not too much. It's nice to meet you. Shake the hand, not too limp. Lash said, clearly travel-worn, but full of easy confidence. This is Marina Unpronounceable. The woman said something beginning with straw and a herd of ch and k, and not nearly enough vowels in it. Dale blinked in bafflement. Marina sighed. MDS, SkyBSD. Dale blinked again, this time in surprise. MDS at SkyBSD.org. You do the crypto storage layers. That was hard stuff. Some of them, yes, Marina said. Gentlemen, the clerk said, let's get you both checked in. Identification? By the time Dale fumbled for his wallet and extricated his driver's license from a flurry of receipt, can't lose a receipt, he could expense all of this. Lash had moved up and slipped his license onto the cool laminate counter.
Call from name unavailable.
As the receptionist typed, Lash looked at Dale and said, you're doing the talk on wireless IP service using abandoned building rooftops, aren't you? He knows who I am. Dale's back tightened as he suddenly felt haunted. That's right. I bet that's going to be a great talk. Dale swallowed. I hope so. It's my first time. You've never been here before, Lash said. Well, welcome. Welcome, Marina said. Of course he's welcoming me, Dale thought. He thinks I'm one of the good guys. Okay, that was chapter one. I'm going to skip ahead to a scene during the conference where someone had has sadly been murdered during opening ceremonies, and now we're trying to go on. Full of fresh determination, Dale heaved open McDonald Hall's heavy front door to have his nose assaulted by sugar. The conference crowd looked almost as dense as it had during breakfast, but the day's events had drained animation from people's faces. Conversations had risen above funeral home whispers, but didn't come near this morning's boisterous, if sleepy, cheer. A skinny guy in jeans and an adorable Linux t-shirt stood near the entrance with a small paper plate in one hand, using the plastic fork in the other to emphasize his words as he talked to one of the nattily suited Indian men. Dale caught a few words, something about problems in library versioning. Mr. Adorable Linux seemed intent on bludgeoning his opinion into the other man. Of course, shared library symbol versioning caused problems. That's what symbol versioning was for. But the problems it created were less pernicious than the problems it solved. A tall woman, thin to the point of gauntness, strode out of the crowd with her own paper plate and claimed a quiet spot near one of the pillars supporting the mezzanine. Cake! Someone had generously brought cake for the afternoon break. Someone was a bastard. Dale wasn't really hungry. He just wanted. He tugged his tablet out of his cargo pocket in a deliberate attempt to distract himself. Three talks he might like to see closed out the day's programming. One on resource locking and CoreBSD's experimental 512 processor support. Another on improvements to nested virtualization in SkyBSD. And a third on software-based frame switching. Plus a fourth talk on an experimental port of the SkyBSD source tree to Git. But Dale would rather be left alone with the cake and an alibi than sit through yet another talk on source code management tools, especially with all the people who wanted SkyBSD to switch to Git. But he could pick a talk, go in early, claim a spot, and get to work. Killers don't catch themselves. Dale grimaced. The first three talks sounded interesting, which meant any of them would do. The kernel locking talk was in the big lecture hall with decent power and wireless. It had a side door, so he could avoid the cake trap. He hunched his shoulders and plunged into the crowd. Dale, someone called. Dale stopped, glancing around. Someone bumped into his backpack, making him take a clumsy half step. Who was it? Sorry, Dale said over his shoulder. The guy behind him silently scuttled around Dale. There. Langton was coming up to him, one hand raised. Dale should have expected that. How did it go? Langton said. Lash's killer was pillaging his victim's room, stole his laptop, and chased me. Fine. You gave them the old key card back? Yep, the girl at the desk, she was calling housekeeping as I came back. Good, Langton dropped his voice. Thanks again for moving. Whatever I can do to help. That phrase had always struck Dale as vacuous, a meaningless social lubricant used by people that didn't want to do anything. It suddenly felt weighted, a surprise oath. Dale had something he could do. And to his own surprise, he was going to do it. You're doing plenty, Langton said. Did you get your wristband? Wristband? He'd missed something else? You need one to get into dinner tonight. Sharon has them. The table right by the cake. Did you get cake? No, I didn't, and I deserve a piece. I think I need to pass. Be sure you get your wristband, though. Something behind Dale caught Langton's eye. I need to get on something. Talk to you later. Later, Dale said. Shuffling around the crowd, Dale made out a woman sitting at the buffet table at the far end from the cake. He slipped up to her and exchanged his name for a bright blue rubbery wristband imprinted with BSD North, somehow escaping without getting tractor beamed into the cake line. Then made his way to the top tier of the lecture hall so he could settle into the last roll. What he needed to do, he didn't want anyone shoulder surfing. A couple other guys were already camped in the back, heads bent together so they could break into the Federal Reserve or something without anyone noticing. But the far left corner was empty. Perfect. He just had the laptop running and connected to the conference network when a couple more attendees strode into the lecture hall, laughing loudly. Seconds on cake are open, one called, and they're trying to get rid of it, so they're big slices now. Dale deliberately concentrated on how the laptop pressed against his gut. Remember the conference dinner tonight. You don't need cake, not even a big slice. Ridiculously big slices. Dale drew a deep breath and focused. Log into the home machine. Bounce from there to Indonesia, then the Czech Republic, and finally back to that Canadian machine and into the Byward University Facilities Network. He'd done the same work only the day before. His fingers flew and he glided right into the residence hall management system. Someone had been in his suite. The only way to open the suite was with a key card. The management system recorded every key swipe. All Dale needed to do was identify the key cards that had opened 1408 this afternoon. Whoever had gone in right before Dale was his suspect. Okay, that is it for a murder mystery. So if you're still here, I hope you enjoyed that. And I'm going to move on. I'm currently writing a book called TLS Mastery, and I'm going to read a couple short bits from it, and then we'll take some questions. And this is right from the beginning of the book. Of the innumerable things I detest about information security, of the innumerable things I detest about information technology, first prize goes to the word security. Not the concepts behind it, the actual word. The definition of security wobbles drunkenly all around the dictionary, depending on who's speaking, who's listening, the context, and the distance to the nearest brute squad. It's this transcendental state where everyone is perfectly safe from everyone, but it's not inconvenient or intimidating or incomprehensible in the slightest. Security is happy fun land, where everybody eats hot fudge sundaes all day, every day, without developing diabetes or gaining so much as a gram. The only way to make this word even slightly meaningful is to tightly define the context. That's one advantage transport layer security, TLS, has. What it secures is right in the name. And even then, it's misunderstood. It doesn't make web servers secure. That little shield icon in the web browser's address bar doesn't mean your credit card information won't end up being used to purchase llama pornography. TLS encrypts a network connection during transit. That's it. It doesn't protect the client or the server from attackers. It doesn't keep scammers from tricking you out of your personal data. It doesn't even totally guarantee that you're at the site you think you're at. Protecting data in transit is vital. While it's best known for websites, a TLS-aware application can apply TLS to any TCP or UDP network connection. TLS is also poorly understood. Most sysadmins know that they get a certificate, slap it into place, and magic happens. These certificates used to be expensive. Over the last 20 years, the price has dropped, and today you can get them for free. There are still times you want one of the expensive certificates, but most of us have no idea when that expense is warranted. Even with free certificates, I'm still not fond of TLS. This certainly isn't one of those tech books where the author is so besotted by the technology that you wonder if it's going to turn into a kissing book. But TLS is pervasive, frustrating, and complex. Understanding is our only way to cope with it. And I'm going to skip ahead. And I've got a couple moments left for reading, so I'm going to talk about trust models, which I suspect is a big topic for Privacy Week. The big problem of public key encryption is determining an authoritative source of trustworthy public keys. You'll find two models for trusting public keys, the Web of Trust and Certificate Authorities. They differ by who performs the labor of deciding who to trust. The Web of Trust model, popularized by OpenPGP, boils down to requiring the user to make the initial trust decisions and then assesses the whole world with transitive trust. It comes down to, I choose to trust key A, and key A trusts B, who trusts C, who trusts D, so I will trust D. It is totally unsuitable for end users who merely want to purchase a custom-fitted six-fingered glove without a packet sniffer stealing their credit card details. The certificate authority model escapes making the user do any trust work by choosing to trust organizations that have badgered, bribed, or blackmailed their way into being considered trustworthy. These broadly trusted root certificate authorities can sign certificates for the rest of us and are subject to audits to ensure they only sign valid certificate requests. Both models have problems. The web of trust is confusing, difficult to use, and easily gamed. Any system that relies on every individual user's ability to make good decisions is inherently flawed, as US democracy demonstrates. The authoritarian CA model was expensive until recently and relied upon CAs perfectly verifying all information. Any system that relies on elites to make all the important decisions is also inherently flawed, as any technocracy proves. The only sensible thing to do is pretend safety exists and take refuge in comforting 1980s fantasy flicks. TLS and SSL were designed to separate people from their money, and user ease is the deciding factor in such protocols. TLS uses the certificate authority model. The event of the automated certificate management environment, ACME, meant routine CA certificates can be obtained for free and prompted me to write this book. And I think that gets me at exactly on the clock or on the hour, which is when we said we'd take questions.
So, there are a few questions already. Some of them I'm not completely sure how much it's a humorous question or not. One of them is, why Git and not Darks?
I'm sorry?
Why Git and not Darks? So why choosing Git as a version control system?
Oh.
So I'm not sure how much humorous that is or not. I cannot really say.
The short answer is because the title came to me, Git Commit Murder, and everything followed from that. If you're in I come from a BSD background, FreeBSD, OpenBSD, etc. And overwhelmingly, we do not use Git. We predate Git by decades. And it's one of those perennial arguments that it's been had for decades. Should we switch? Should we not? And that combined with the title, how could I not write the book?
Yeah, well, I mean, all of the systems have their pros and cons. I mean, CVS was an improvement.
Yes. Yes.
Back then, SVN was an improvement to some degree.
Yes.
Git has other strengths. So
there are Git has been wildly successful. I'm not the one doing the work, so I don't care what tool you use.
Yeah, of course. Then there is another question that sounds a bit like shut up and take my money to a degree. there is the question of when can we purchase your ebooks with crypto? So I'm not sure if they mean books about crypto or cryptocurrency. It's not completely clear to me, but...
There are... A small number of people want to purchase with cryptocurrency. The number of customers has not been, or sorry, the number of potential customers has not been worth the time for me to set it up. And it is something that I would have to keep track of and that would demand continuous ongoing attention. And I make my decisions based on what requires my attention. So the short answer is not at this time.
Okay.
I'm aware of it. If things change, my decision will change.
Okay, thank you. And then there is another slightly broader question. So I know your background, you came from a sysadmin background. And the question was, what was the reason and how did you come to be an author and especially doing this certain mix you're doing with doing both fictional work as well as doing quite interesting technical books? I mean, at least in my opinion. And I mean, they're also, you can see some of the humor of your fictional books in your technical works as well, in my experience. But how did you come to take this path?
Well, I've always been a writer. I discovered when I was 4 years old that books were written by human beings. They were not handed down by some divine power. And ever since then, I have been writing. And it was in the fairly early in the 90s, I believe, I was reading Sysadmin magazine. And there was an article that was informationally correct, but the writing was very poor. And I thought, sheesh, I could write a better article than that. And I turned the page. And right there was a statement, Sysadmin magazine is looking for authors. And they would pay you. So I wrote an article, I sent it in. They paid me $800. And I said, you know, the biggest paycheck I had gotten from writing fiction was a few thousand dollars for a much bigger, for an entire book. So the idea of being paid $800 for 1,500 words, I freely admit I had dollar signs in my eyes. And then I found ways to make it fun. If you can't enjoy the work you're doing, if the reader can't enjoy the book, but why do it? So... And it turns out that writing technology books is a heck of a lot better way to make a living than sitting on conference calls in an office. So here I am.
Sitting in an office in a conference call.
Yeah. yes, but you asked. Yeah, Consent makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, also looking back at the talks, we also topics we already had and at this in this conference, I find it also quite nice that you choose to publish your ebooks also without DRM.
Oh, DRM is stupid. It's the long and short of it.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to point it out because we already had that topic and the problems of DRM in this conference. So I thought it was nice. It's nice for me that you are publishing your books also in an electronic way where you do not track the people and try to control everything.
Well, people who download my books and don't pay for them really annoy me. For example, I've got here that this is my latest FreeBSD book. This is a big, thick book. It is considered really the guiding reference on the topic, and it's $50 as an it. No, I think it's $40 as an ebook. Most of the time, if you need this as a professional reference and you're working as a professional sysadmin, which is a well-paid job, most of the time your company will buy a book for you on the stuff they're using. If it's something you're interested in learning, you would pay a tutorial instructor, pay your teacher. So yes, those people really annoy me, but more important are the people who do pay me. The people who want good books to continue to exist, and they want to learn the topics, and they want to, they want more books to appear in the world. Because this is this is a lot of work. I spent, adding it all up, about a man year writing this book. So, and most people understand I should be paid for that. And I appreciate and I love every one of you. So yes, I see no point in making your life harder because some people are selfish jerks. Now, if you happen to see a selfish jerk who's pirating books that he really should be paying for, I personally would appreciate it if you would call them a selfish jerk to their face and ask that they support artists and creators. I would greatly appreciate that. But you folks who help me keep the lights on, I love you. I'm not going to make your life any harder.
Okay, thank you. I'll just look if there are any questions that came in since the last one. There are a few new questions. One question is, it's not that much of a pain in the ass as Cisco IOS, but might you want to write a Junos book at some point?
Well, here's the thing. I only write about what I work with. And I have never work with Junos. So I could not legitimately write a Junos book. I could do a lot of research. I could get on other people's experiences, but it would not be authentic. And authenticity is important even in tech books. The TLS book I'm writing, I have worked with TLS for 20 years. I know horrible things about TLS. Junos, I could only do a surface job on. So I'm not going to do it because you deserve better.
Oh, okay. There is another question where I'm not sure if somebody wants to start the flame war here. There is the question is, can you please explain your view on Emacs and or Emacs versus Vim? I'm not sure it might be somebody trying to start the flame war.
Oh, well, especially since I wrote the definitive book on the standard text editor, which is, of course, Ed. So, no. Learn how to use an editor without a monitor on your computer, and then we'll talk editors.
So you write your books in Ed?
I have. The Ed book was written in Ed.
Oh.
I then had to convert it over to Microsoft Word because the publishing tools at scale require Microsoft tools, and I have a long rant on that about my on my website before anybody gets in my face about it, because 95% compatibility with the printing tools of the world is not good enough, is the short answer.
Yeah.
But yes, use Ed. Ed is a real editor for real sysadmins.
Okay. It looks like we currently do not have any questions left.
Well, we have so 1 minute. So, I do have a slide that, if people want more information, the producers could throw that slide around somewhere in here to close us out. That has my website and where I can be found on social media. And if nothing else, if you hated the whole thing, that gives you some things to add to your block lists. So thank you all for coming. I'm going to check in on the big blue button meeting room and see if anyone's there.
Okay. So see you in a minute.
See you.